הקדמת ספר הזוהר.
Introduction of the Zohar, article The Lily, item 1. Rabbi Chizkiya opened and said that the lily among thorns is the gathering of Israel, meaning the Malchut of Atzilut, or the collective Malchut of all worlds, which is one and the same. There is a rose, he says, and there is a rose, meaning there are seemingly several forms of the rose, meaning, or lily, meaning the Malchut, the gathering of Israel. It has different facets. Just as the rose among the thorns is tinged with red and white, the assembly of Israel contains din, judgment, and rachamim, mercy. Just as a rose has 13 petals, the assembly of Israel consists of 13 qualities of rachamim surrounding it on all sides. In the verse, in the beginning, God created, God too elicited 13 words to surround the assembly of Israel and to keep her, meaning to lead them to correction and keep them, to accompany them on the way to correction. These words, which accompany us towards correction, are the words in the Torah after in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth was empty and chaotic, and the darkness over the face of the abyss and the spirit. Until these words and the Spirit. Up to the words of God hovered. This is what Rabbi Chizkiya tells us. Meaning he gave this specific passage. Then it's taken by those who continue interpreting, and they say this. Explanation, and this is mostly Baal HaSulam. There are 10 sefirot, Keter, Chochma, Bina, Chesed, Gvurah, Tiferet, Netzachot, Yesod, Malchut. That we know is the entire structure of reality, as well as the littlest part of it, and all the other parts of it, whatever size they are, they're all structured as 10. However, and because the last part of Malchut that feels, that senses, that identifies itself, cannot exist if it isn't the 10th part of the structure. However, essentially they are only 5. Keter, Chochma, Bina, Tiferet, and Malchut. Since the Sefirah of Tiferet contains 6 Sefirot, Chagat, Nehi, within it. They became 5 Partsufim. Meaning 10 Sefirot, or 5 Sefirot, or 5 Partsufim. Arechanpin, Abba Ve'ima, and Zon. Meaning Arechanpin, Abba, Ima, Zeranpin, Nukva. That's 5. Keter is called Arechanpin. Chochma and Bina are called Abba and Ima. Tiferet and Malchut are called Zeranpin and Nukva. Still, it's all clear and smooth. We understand these things and know them. What I basically want to recommend to you here is not to really make an effort to remember the details. Don't try to put them in boxes in your mind and keep them there so that you can extract them and use them. We don't need to be student-like. What's important for me is to be inspired by the words so that my feelings will play within me, so it'll strike according me with the Zohar. At the moment, we're reading it like information, but in fact, our goal, especially in this part of the Zohar, the introduction of the Zohar, is to be inspired by what the Zohar tells us. Just like that, like a kid who is inspired by a tale that is told. Fictional, doesn't matter, unrealistic, but he lives it. Without understanding so much, without checking whether that's truth or not, doesn't matter to us. What we want is to have our vessels shaking within, vibrating somewhat by the Zohar, just like a baby. The 7 days of creation here are the two Parzufim, Zeran Pin and Nukva of Atzilut. They contain 7 Sfirot Chagat Nehi, which relates to Zeran Pin and Malchut, Nukva. The writings of the act of creation explain how Abba Ve'ima, which are Chochmah and Binah of Atzilut, emanated them from the beginning of their formation until the end of the Gadlut, their adulthood, which is conducted in them over 6,000 years. So what is happening? All in all, the 7 days of the creation, which are Zeran Pin and Nukva, that's how they're called, by Abba Ve'ima, they're born, and by Abba Ve'ima, they grow until they reach their final adulthood, which is what's called the end of 6,000 years. This entire process is called 6,000 years. Rabbi Chizkiah begins with the explanation of Nukva of Zeran Pin, explaining the order of her emanation from Ima, Bina, which is called Elohim. This is the meaning of Rabbi Chizkiah beginning with the explanation of the rose, which is the Nukva of Zeran Pin. At the time of her Gadlut, the Nukva of Zeran Pin is called the Assembly of Israel. In the infancy stage, it's called the rose. In the adulthood, the Assembly of Israel. And this is why it says, what is a rose? It is the Assembly of Israel. There are two states to that rose. One, Katnut, infancy, the beginning of her formation, in which there is only the Sfira of Keter in her, in which her light of Nefesh is clothed, and her bottom nine fall outside of Atzilut, in the world of Bria, basically the worlds of Bria, but we refer to it as Bria because it's the first world of it. Two, Gadlut, adulthood, when her bottom nine rise from the worlds of Bia, or Bria, into the world of Atzilut. And with them she is built into a complete Parzuf with 10 Sfirot above the Parsa. At that time she rises with Zeran Pin, her husband, to an equal level with Abba Ve'ima of Atzilut. She connects to Zeran Pin, then Zeran Pin and Nukva rise to Abba and Ima. And they are included there, they clothe them, Abba Ve'ima. Then Zeran Pin is called Israel, meaning he's in Gadlut now, with the letters Li Rosh, which means I have a Rosh, a head. And the Nukva is called the Assembly, or Gathering of Israel. For she assembles within her all the lights of Israel, her husband, and gives them to the lower ones, to the souls which depend on her, which are part of her. Katnut, infancy, is called a rose among thorns. Since her bottom nine were emptied from the light of Atzilut and remained as thorns, they're found below the Parsa, in the worlds of Bia. Gadlut, adulthood, is called plainly a rose, or the Assembly of Israel, not among thorns. The thorns already disappear, these spikes, because these thorns are the dry leaves that have dried up from lack of light. She doesn't have light in her bottom nine sfirot, which are below the Parsa. This is why it was said The Gadlut is plainly called a rose or the assembly of Israel. This is why it was said, there is a rose and there is a rose, this way and that way, this rose and that rose. But usually we refer to the rose as Katnut and the assembly of Israel as Gadlut. But, well, so far it's clear. Questions. Or if you ask about the style or the study itself, or what do you feel? Roy Meron is looking, is afraid of looking at me, is looking at the ceiling. Chup, you're looking at me from afar, you know, sticking your head out. Okay. So really, what do you think? You're looking at me like, well, this poor guy, what does he need to teach here?
You're saying emotion, but you're doing it intellectual. So what's up?
For now, this is so. I flow with the text.
No, so why do we need the explanation that you add?
It's not intellectual. Right now, it's information. Definitions, let's say. Definitions. There is a malchut in katnut, just a point. The bottom nine are below the parsa. She can be in gadlut, where the lower nine rise to her, and then she can connect with zranpin. And then she rises to Abba Ve'ima and then receive the lights of Gadlut. And the definitions refer to these states, that's how she's called in Katnut. When only her Keter is above the Parsa, it's called the rose among the thorns. In Gadlut, when she rises with Zeranpin to Abba Ve'ima, she's called either just a rose, plainly without thorns, or the gathering of Israel, as she assembles or gathers all the lights that come from Israel. Who is Israel? Zeranpin. Zeranpin is her husband. He rises to Abba. So Nukva receives the lights that he brings from Abba. But when she rises to Ima, she equips herself with the light of Chasadim, a lot of light of Chasadim, of Bina. Then she can receive the light of Chokhmah from Zeranpin, because it's clothed in the light of Bina. Then she has the potsuf of Gadlut. And that's how they make these actions until they come to a point where they are literally completely similar to Abba Ve'ima, both of them. Then Abba Ve'ima fulfill them exactly the way they are, and this is called the final correction, the end of the 6,000 years. The conclusion of the 6,000 years. We'll learn that more. He just mentioned it among the words. But that's our entire work. That's our entire reality. That's where we are. We're right now in the Nukva as well, but in the lily, the rose among the thorns, were dried up because the Nukva is only a small point. Its bottom nine are below the Parsa. They contain no light, neither Chasadim nor Chokhmah. They have a bit of illumination that only enlivens it for a time of need, and that's it. And we are fed by the lower nine, and that's it. That's what's called exile. Exile is called when the lower nine sefirot of the Nukva are below the Parsa. Redemption is called when Nukva elevates her bottom nine sefirot above the Parsa. The better you understand these definitions, the easier it gets with them for you. You'll begin to feel these states. Gadlut, Katnut, more light, less light, Chasadim, Chokhmah. You'll enter the emotion. I'm telling you from experience, this is how it works. When you start working in some technical facility, you're a technical person. When you start working on a certain technical facility, or you start to get to know a software on the computer. So what's going on? Yeah, first you just click this, click that, click this. Then you start getting to know it. You begin to work with it like with an animal. I did this. why did it do this, and it did this to me, and so on, your emotion starts getting involved. What's the difference? There's an emotion in the computer? No. You have an emotion for it? No, as well. But it starts from your desire to receive, wanting to get fulfillment through the computer. Then you begin to relate to the computer your own qualities. And that's what's happened with the Creator. Same thing. You picture the Creator the way you start working with the system. But that requires a few words. Just like when you work with a software, with a computer, you need to know the components somewhat, crudely, roughly, but enter some sort of reciprocity with them. Same thing in every other area. I'm not even talking about the states where you know, situations where true emotion is needed. Try talking to painters and the what they go through and the depth and of their aim, and then the musicians, and it's also full of knowledge there and information and technicality. Just plain technicality. You know, just start learning all the scales, all the musical scales, you know, that they go through in their training. What do you think? What emotion you find there? 5 hours a day just to learn that. What can you do? So just realize that in order to start a communication, a minimal communication with the Zohar, you need to understand a few words to have a common language with it. And so far, there's no wisdom here. They only told you Malchut of Atzilut, Katnut Gadlut. That's the name of it in Gadlut. That's the name in Katnut. Why? So you can later refer to these words, understand what they're trying to convey to you. Yes.
Yes, that's clear, but from my experience and my ears here, the entrance to the text is on the way. Maybe there's a mutual exertion from below. On the other hand, there's this grace from above that reveals itself. So the question is, how does this happen? How does the Kli become such in order to enter the text? Because that's our goal.
That's the goal after you have some superficial connection with the text. After that, it can become more internal. You still need to know the language first. The language, simply the language. Word and word and another word, and the definitions of the words in a plain manner.
The question is, whom do we intend to? Because for years we engage in this. The question is, how do we shorten the process?
But there's nothing here to short-circuit. You don't have any connection that you're trying to short-circuit yet. I don't understand you. If I don't know how to read a text, how can I immediately delve into its interior? Well, what is the claim here? I don't understand. What complaint can you have? Where is this entrance of Yud Kei Vav Kei that has to be everywhere? No, I want to leave right away. You promised me the Zohar. True, I promised a book that has the word Zohar on the cover. Open it and delve into it. What? It's like Alice in Wonderland. Seriously, I don't understand you. What? It's Harry Potter? What's going on with you? It's a little bit more. I see that today you're all agreeing with him, with Nahali, but it's not going to work. Here's your buddy. Yeah.
I just want to say the following. First of all, today, in relation to yesterday, it felt much more connected to the text than yesterday. And I also feel that there is a possibility to a breakthrough here, to connect between the Zohar and the Taz. I felt that today there was something more, but there were a few discernments that I do want to ask about. First of all, is that I tried beyond this, as we do in the Zohar, to be in a certain prayer. And the mind, since it's intellectual, it's stole my intention.
Okay, never mind. You're right. First of all, the text is new, the approach is new, perhaps even weird. The combination of the emotion and the intellect, the technical aspect and some sort of a legend style or something like that, really. The Zohar is something very, very sort of... it's kind of shattering. You start with your emotion, then all of a sudden it cuts to the intellect, and all of a sudden then you kind of need to prepare for the emotion, you know. You don't aim your sensations to feel it, and then boom, it just enters you without notice. It's true, it is happening that way, but you're going to feel how sweet it is.
But I do want to say, and there was something that I was missing once you unveiled it and spoke about it, this example that you gave about the exile, that is the lower nine below the parsa, if you would have added another issue of...
We'll read about that.
But if you would even once in a while said how this connects to not only in the world of Sefirot, but also in the level of the work within the group, or the work with the Creator, something that is a bit more, a bit closer, that it's easier to perceive, and then we'll be able to receive a whole picture and to make this knowledge emotional.
We'll do it. Okay, we'll do it. That's it, in principle? Yes, Nessie.
I want to praise the article. And we need to thank for being privileged to read this. It's great, it's very important. We don't have to enter any explanations. That's my opinion. I think that there are more people who think the same.
It's just plain reading and that's it, yeah?
What's going on here is something crazy, and it's great.
This is true. I agree with this more. I'm not going to add that much. Rather, we'll read and you'll feel how this is really like, you know, a cake with cream. It's like you take a nice cup of coffee or a cappuccino, but with cream on it, something, a delicacy, you know? This is what you need to feel all through the introduction of the Zohar.
Partially, I think, I really feel that you take me by my hand and that you're leading me word by word.
I want to take you in here, yeah. It's like it was said, and it's true, it's a very unique combination of mind and heart.
I think it's perfect. I don't know if it's possible, but if we'll be able to somehow enter this way of study within TAS.
No. In TAS, you need to enter, to add your emotion. That's how it's built. In Shamati, you have to add something of your knowledge. In TAS, you have to add your work. And here, it's all set. Just open yourself up. That's how the book is built.
Israel from Khadera is asking, what should we be excited from hearing it the first time, from hearing new things, from the language, from the nice words? What should we be impressed by?
This he won't know for now, but it will certainly generate excitement. There are very special vibrations here, which, how to say it? Well, it's the light that exists in a very, very high intensity. When we say the Zohar is an important book, as Baal HaSalam says, there's no higher than that book, they reach the 125 degrees, the final correction, and so forth, we're just reiterating these words, we're not really, you know, giving any value to it. Right or not? Right. Now you'll understand somewhat. You know, it's like a baby is given something to taste for the first time, except for, you know, his mother's milk. Have you seen that? You know, they go like, its face becomes sour or the opposite and this and that. So this is the first taste. So we have to see what it is. But then you'll really understand that the Zohar, the Ari, Baal HaSulam, they wrote about it, they put it together, they communicated parts of it in different ways. They took everything from there. They took it all from there. Here we begin to see what is so unique, so godly about this book, that and everyone just faces it with, you know, standing on their rear feet. Well, should we continue a little bit or move on to another part? What? Huh? Continue. Okay, guys, let's continue. So we'll continue. So, we'll continue, get used to it. Now, there may be some more difficult parts. What does it mean, more difficult? Containing many more new discernments that you will later get used to. And again, the most important is, after all, to be inspired, excited. That's how the light that reforms arrives, and not always, you know, intellectualize it. Although this is needed also. The Zohar doesn't speak about more than what's in Atzilut. The Zohar, the Zohar Plead, blessed be He, the Nukva, the Malchut of Atzilut, where they connect. That's it. Besides these two, there's nothing to talk about. It's obvious. All the rest is a system that helps connecting the two. Where did I stop? Ah, the shade, the red color. The red color indicates that there is gripping to the outer ones there for the klipot shells to suckle from her. So if we have red leaves in the rose, it's not good. He says there's gripping to the outer ones there to suckle from her. And this is in Katnut of the Malchut, when her bottom nine are in Bria. There is also white in her Kli of Keter, meaning not in the bottom line, in bottom nine, but in the Kli of Keter. The Keter is white, where there is no gripping to the outer ones, because it's above the Parsa. It was said, just as a rose among the thorns is tinged with red and white. The Assembly of Israel contains Din and Rachamim. This indicates that even in her Gadlut, called the Assembly of Israel, and not Rose Among Thorns, although at that time she rises and clothes the Bina, Ima, Malchut rises to Ima, Din still remains, judgment still remains in her. Why? Because she needs the masach that is set up in her for the coupling of beating, zivug daka, which strikes the upper light and reflects it back because of the judgment in the masach, by which it raises the ten sefirot of returning light or reflected light, which is called the light of din. And within them, it draws sfirot of the direct light, or yashar, called light of rachamim. In short, the light of chasadim, the returning light that rises from below upwards, the light of din, for which malchut requires a screen to overcome, to have the density of the screen over the aviut, the thickness. Just as we learn from any coupling of beating. And there are din and rachamim. And so in the rachamim, the direct light, the din, is dressed. So we're... Sorry. I said the opposite. You can get confused. By that, it raises 10 sefirot of Or Chozev, returning light, which is called the light of Din, because it comes from the beating. And within them, it draws 10 sefirot of direct light, called light of Rachamim. Hence, there are Din and Rachamim in the assembly of Israel. So the Nukva and Gadlut, when she rises to Ima, she nevertheless has both Din and Rachamim, because she overcomes her will to receive. The desire does not disappear. It's always on top of the Oviyut and the Masach, corresponding to the red and white that the rose among the thorns has. So far, so clear? See the state? Yes or no? There is a masach, there is a viyut, there is zivug of haka'ah in gadlut. And then Nukva receives the light as she has returning light. Since the returning light rises from the masach upwards, it means she builds the sefirot of Rosh. In that state, she's called Israel, the gathering of Israel, as she gathers all the lights of Israel. Israel is called Zeranpin, and she gathers them, assembles them. That's why she's called the Assembly of Israel. Where does the light of Zeranpin enter the Nukva? It enters Herosh, the 10 sefirot of Din, of returning light. What's the name of the 10 sefirot of direct light that clothe into the returning light? Light of Rachamim. That's why Nukva and Gadlut has both Din and Rachamim. So there is a rose and there is a rose. In several ways, mostly Gadlut and Katnut. That's all. And now he gives a different example. This is the sea that Solomon made, which stands on 12 oxen. This is so because her bottom 9 sefirot that fell into Bria have been established there in 12 oxen. And the point of Keter that remained in Atzilut is the sea that stands atop them from above, over the 12 oxen, meaning the bottom 9 sefirot of Nukva that fall below the Parsa are called 12 oxen. Why 12? We'll see. Altogether, they are called the 13 petals of the rose, meaning there are 13 leaves in the rose. Now, look at the confusion. Before that, he said 5 leaves. Now he says, let's call it 13. Why 13? 1 above, 12 below. What is he trying to hint at here? You will get to know many such examples. Confusion, but we don't care. What we care about is what is it implying about here? What does this give us? The Mochen of Gadlut of Nukva that contain illumination of Chokhmah extend from the 13 names called the 13 qualities of Rachamim, of mercy. This is why it was said the Assembly of Israel consists of 13 qualities of Rachamim as well. The main thing that Rabbi Chizkiah comes to teach us in this comparison between the rose among the thorns and the Assembly of Israel, meaning the Katnut and Gadlut of the Nukva, is that everything that the Nukva has in her state of Gadlut must correspondingly have a preparation and qualification in the beginning of her formation. Meaning what she has in Gadlut is only an evolution of Katnut. Of course it exists in the Katnut, but in a miniature way. This is what he's trying to show us, that where we are right now, we also have everything already, all the preparations until the end of correction. Only we need the upper light to evolve them. This is why it was said that opposite the white and red in Katnut, Din and Achamim come out in her in Gadlut. And opposite the 13 leaves in Katnut, 13 qualities of Achamim appear in her in Gadlut. Okay. He said, Elohim, which also means God in the Bible, in the beginning God created, is the Binah that emanates to the Nukva of Zeranpin. He elicited 13 words. As he mentioned above, the heaven and the earth was empty and chaotic, and the darkness over the face of the abyss and the spirit. Meaning, up to the second word of Elohim. These 13 words imply to the same 13 leaves of the rose among the thorns. The sea that stands over the 12 oxen, which are preparation and qualification for the assembly of Israel, to receive 13 qualities of Rachamim. It is written to surround the assembly of Israel and to keep her. To surround, meaning to prepare it for correction. This is because the 13 qualities of Rachamim, the complete Mochin of Nukva, look what he tells us now. Because Nukva rises to these 13 qualities in Gadlut. They are regarded as surrounding and illuminating her on all sides from all around. Through them, she is kept from contact with the outer ones, because as long as from all the outer ones, that is the klipot that are above below the parsa, because it is guarded by that light and that keeps her above the parsa. Because as long as the great mochin and illumination of Chokhmah from the 13 qualities are not in her, there is suction for the outer ones in her. So there is also an illumination in Katnut that allows Nukva to be guarded from the outer ones. Although everyone is trying to stick to it like leeches and suck from it. This is called the state of Israel in exile. We've come to item 2. What do you want? Say.
What you just said, that it keeps it in Katnut, is that like the sustaining force in Ibu?
No, don't add. The more you add, the more you subtract. If you study, you study what you get. And in the meantime, especially in the beginning, just get to know the style. That's insufficient. What, Yeti?
Could you please explain? He's talking a lot about mercy and judgment. You've explained O Chasadim and O Chokhmah, but there are a few clothings in it. It's using it a few times in a Masach also.
This can also get us confused, because if we are talking about vessels and the lights, there can be all kinds of opposite conclusions here. The returning light. What do I want about the returning light? My intention. To love the Creator, to bestow to Him through the Assembly of Israel, through everyone, of course. Otherwise, the Nukva does not exist. Otherwise, I don't bestow. If I'm not in the Assembly of Israel, I don't bestow. So, this is called from love of the created beings, from the gathering of Israel to the Creator. That's the action. That's how it's called. Now, the question is, this action, I want to give, I want to love. Is that Din or Rachamim?
That's Din, that's judgment.
Why? Why?
Because that's an action you're doing, and the sensation you receive will be mercy.
But what do I want to do? What am I doing? I want to love. How does love relate to Din, to judgment? That love relates to Rachamim, to mercy, doesn't it?
Out of having the judgment, you can feel the mercy.
You're smart.
I know.
You know. Good.
What I'm saying is out of what I've learned.
So what you've learned, I also know. Don't tell me about it. What am I trying to say? That the action here seems opposite, and it truly is opposite from how it's termed. Because the term is din, and what I want to do here is rachamim. I want to bestow, right or not? Good. So the Creator's bestowal is called rachamim, mercy, because He has direct mercy. On my behalf, I name it based on the action, not exactly the purpose of it, the intention. That's why I call it din, the judgment, because it denotes my work all over the world to receive. So I am in judgment. This is the symbol of the red in the rose, and the symbol of the Creator is the white, the rachamim, the mercy. Because for Him, it happens directly with nothing to overcome. And for me, it requires to overcome. And if I am not really in this judgment, the deen, overcoming, meaning just partially, half, quarter of it, then you can say it's not exactly this kind of rose, but it's a pink rose. It's not exactly red. Yeah, literally. So this is where you start discerning right, left, colors. So you speak about colors, but in fact these are not colors. These are desires. In what direction are they working? And then to what extent, based on the depth of color, can you work on them? This starts giving you the foundation of colors in our world. And you can also see from this why red and white are the colors of the bride. Precisely them belong to Malchut. Our blood also contains the red particles and white particles, red blood cells and white blood cells. All these things are connected, but we'll connect them later. We'll learn. There were questions there. Ask a question if you already get the mic. Vibrations in the words.
No. Is it worth it for people that don't understand Hebrew to listen to the reading in Hebrew?
Those who don't understand Hebrew as well, through the translation, they'll feel the same. I'm following up on the translator's work, and really, they're doing great work. It's very difficult, and they feel it. Precisely those who translate feel me well. I see that they get from my words more than I want to say. There's no problem. They work well, the translators.
The ascension of Malchut to Ima. Usually we're saying, or maybe I misheard, is that the ascension is through Zeranpin. Not through Zeranpin, alongside with Zeranpin. Zon is always working in pairs. Malchut ascends to Zeranpin, Zeranpin to Bina. And that's something that refers to a special resemblance and very special incidents. The two big luminances, but the adult takes twice as much, but here we're talking about pairs. Zon rise to Abba and Ima. Zeranpin to Abba, Malchut to Ima, and while they're There in Abba Ve'ima they receive Gadlut. There the Zon rise to Abba Ve'ima. Only there do they are clinged to the Creator. That's the human beings, the person, the adhesion to the Creator, or the assembly of Israel to the Creator. Zerampin itself is called Israel, Yeshar Gel, because the whole structure is formed this way, and Malchut is called the Knesset, the Assembly of Israel, because it helps Zerampin to be Israel. It depends upon her solely. Right? So she assembles all the lights from him, all the lights that she compelled him to rise and receive, because the lights are in Abba. Zerampin ascends to Abba, Malchut ascends to Ima, and then compels Zerampin to receive the lights from Abba, and then she receives the lights from him.
What's the difference between Chafetz Chesed, delighted in mercy, and receiving in order to bestow in this order?
It's Katnut and Gadlut. Chafetz Chesed is Katnut, a state of smallness, whereas Knesset Israel, the assembly of Israel, is Gadlut, the great state. Knesset comes from the word assembling, gathering, receiving, concentrating within it, collecting, accumulating within it all the lights. That's the role of Malchut, because as much as she can receive, this is her extent of bestowal to the Creator.
What's the difference in terms of the ascent of the Malchut with Zerampin to Abba Ve'ima?
It is not written. We're not asking about it here, and I don't want to hear such questions. Okay, you're smart. Yes.
Good morning, Rabbi. You said before that Malchut and Zerampin, they go to Abba Ve'ima, and they go as a pair. And when they reach Abba Ve'ima, you said Zerampin rises to Abba and Malchut to Ima. So how come this one goes this and that one goes there?
That's how he writes. I don't want to hear questions that he doesn't answer here. If you want to learn, go to Tess and study there. What Baal HaSulam tells us here, I only add a bit so that we will have the ability to hold on or grasp from here and from there, from somewhere that we all study and use. No more than that. You want to know more details about Zerampin and Malchut? You have a whole 1,000 pages and tests that speak only about this. Go ahead. I don't want you to have this relation to the Zohar. I want this to be clear. And I don't care if you will know what's written here or if you won't. The most important thing is to pass it through your emotions and your mind. And wherever there's intellect, you should add emotions. And wherever there's emotions, you have to add your mind. That's how your soul develops. Yes.
I would like to ask about the question that's being asked or not being asked during the study. In the study that we had in the Zohar, we've learned about 10 and 12. If you counted the words, then you counted 12 words there. No one here asked the question. I'm sure that if you counted the words. Now, seriously, I'm not asking this question about the 12 oxen or the words and so on. So what about what made people didn't ask this question? This question should or shouldn't be asked. I feel that if we want to go through some change in the study, then I don't really understand what about the...
I don't understand what you're asking.
I'm asking about the actual question. I just gave an example of a question that should have been asked.
Which question?
It was said that there's 13 words between Elohim and Elohim in the Zohar. If you counted, and I'm sure people did, they counted 12 and not 13.
12 or 13?
12.
My neighbor counted and I was
smiling.
You want us to count with you? Because if
no,
you know,
I don't care. It's like,
because we want to check whether you're not a counter or you don't.
The question is if this question should be asked or not.
What did he say about it? Why we have 13 or 12 words? What does this refer to? It refers to the parts of the Malchut that are found below the Parsa. Yes? Okay. And above them stands the Malchut, the sea. And the sea is still dry, let's say, because the Malchut does not receive support from these 12 or 13, if you count the fox, then it's 12. And then in the Gadlut, it is being fulfilled. I wanted to ask about the question itself, about the way we study. Where do we ask a question? Don't we? The Zohar is not in order to study. The Zohar is meant for people who want to attain. And there's a huge difference here. And we also spoke about it before. Wisdom in the nations of the world believe. If you want to study, then that's not the place. We don't study the way people who want to study do. We study in order to attract the light that performs. I want with my emotions, because the desire to receive is a matter of creation. So I want to work with my desire to receive. I want the light that performs to work on it, so that the light will reform my desire and will make out of it a form, such a form that will allow the light to enter within the desire, so that the light will change the desire in such a way that it will be shaped so that the light would enter, that it could actually absorb the light within. And then when the light will enter within the desire, then I'll be smart, because the light is the light of Chokhmah, the light. And then the light of the Creator will be clothed within me. And not my mind, not my intellect. How many words do we have here? How many words do we have there? I don't care. I completely don't care. And I'd also, I don't care if the moment I close what I just read, that I'll forget about it. So I'll forget about it. So what? You'll later ask me, what are these 12? I'll tell you, I don't know. I don't remember. And I won't be ashamed of it. And I won't be called a smart disciple according to your formula. But I, for the time being, was able to develop my vessels to be closer to the upper light. And then I drew closer to the true sage, to the Creator. What should a person do with a question that is asked within himself? Let's say usually during the study he doesn't ask this question, but those 12 or 13, you will suddenly ask, wait a minute, the Zohar is saying 13 words, I count 12, and he has a question inside. What should he do with this question? Should he forget it?
To go to someone who will tell him about it, someone knowledgeable.
I'm not laughing, I'm wondering. It doesn't seem like the way of the Rav to do.
It depends through which Rav. If you're asking about me, then what I recommend the student, if he sees that I can't satisfy him, so he has to look for somewhere else where he will be satisfied. I'm not holding here anybody. To the contrary, I recommend people to find somewhere else. Well, let's say people are unsatisfied. What can I do? I'm not complete. I'm not the higher fountain where I can give fulfillment to everyone. I am whatever I am. And I'm not ashamed of it, and therefore I have no problem. People can say whatever they say about me. This is what I can, and that's it. You want something else? Go somewhere else. Perhaps you will find someone else. I wish you good luck. Seriously, this is what I tell to all my students. And I'm not sorry if people went away, if they're looking for things, if they just going back for their mundane life, that's a shame. But if they're searching for things, well done. They're following their soul to find a better place that suits them. It is written that there are many ways to the Creator, not just me. I'm serious. I'm not playing with you. It's not a theater. I'm serious here. There are many different kinds of soul, and every type has a different source. And you see, 12 pairs of cattle, or 13 leaves or thorns. Many discernments, different discernments need to be in order to hold Malchut, the soul. Different discernments. This is why I'm not laughing. People who don't feel at peace with me, they should really look for some other place. But they need to examine if they don't feel well with me because their ego is hurt or because they don't understand my style in order to come closer to the Creator, to godliness. If it's their ego who's hurt, it's a good sign. It means they're advancing. And then they really shouldn't run away. But if the way I teach, if they can't stand it, then they have to look for some other place.
Do you think there's a correct way to study at a different place?
You should search for it.
What do you think?
I don't know. Really, I don't know. Well, I didn't hear any. I didn't hear it. If there is any, I don't know.
I've been in this game for 30 years. From experience, I can tell you there isn't.
It seems to me that unfortunately there isn't any other place, really, unfortunately. Because if there were a few, then these could have gone to those. And, well, you know, Israel is not alone. Israel is not a widow. Many good, solid sources, places. I would have been very happy that the Creator reveals Himself in different ways, different manners. That would have been something very good. But you see, probably this is how it's supposed to be for the time being. If strong people in study of the Gemara would have risen, Shulchan Aruch, such elementary books, and open up the wisdom of Kabbalah through them. Or other people who would rise on the sources of the Bible and open the wisdom of Kabbalah through that. Or through the Agadot, tales. Or through ethics and morals. In different ways of the Torah, how it is manifested, it's complete, it's all one, but how it manifests to people. If it would have been revealed or manifested in such a way, then obviously more people would have been drawn to the internality, because all of a sudden they would have seen that the externality is only a clothing, only an external shell over what is inside, and through that klipa, through that shell, they would have connected to it, because the shell protects the kli. Through the kli, they would have come to the internality of the kli after the shell protects the kli. But probably, well, I have my own excuses for it, but it's not written, so I don't want to say why. But unfortunately, we are probably by ourselves.
So what does Rav think we're looking for in the studying the Zohar? We're looking for some kind of renewing.
I'm looking for several things in the study of the Zohar. First of all, the study of the Zohar is the study of the Zohar. It's not the study of the Ten Sefirot, which belongs to Ashlag or something else that belongs to someone else. Some like this, some disregard that. Zohar is accepted by everyone, by the whole world. Therefore, this kind of study should represent something whole, something collective for everyone. That's one thing. Another thing, it truly gives people a hold in the upper system that influences them, that connects the mind and emotion together. One begins to recognize that this system is between us, system of relationship between us. And that is called Malchut, between us. And in the relationship between us are dry now with thorns between us. This is the relationship that we have. We develop them from our will to receive, our egoistic and attendant will to receive. And in order to revive that rose or that lily, we need to turn those thorns into leaves, to rise it in five leaves, so that they will all accept the form of the white and then the form of the red. White and is chasadim from the Or Chozer, reflected light, which makes the sefirot white by the light that reforms. And then they blush, those sefirot, because Gvura is revealed in them and the light of Chochmah. So in short, so that we will feel that it all depends on the relationship between us, so that we will become a rose, and not in between the thorns, rather a blossoming rose, which sends, spread from it all the way to the Creator. Sense meaning the reflected light. Smells, scent. Like that. It's a good thing if we will be able to connect those two things together. The time has come. It's time. In my search, I have a few more things I'm planning. When the time comes, we'll get to them also. Now it's a very important stage that we're in. All we're lacking are vessels of emotions, to develop our vessels of emotion. Our intellectual vessels cannot develop without developing our emotional vessels. Well, one depends on the other. In the wisdom of Kabbalah, the receptacle vessels and the emotional vessels are the same. It depends on the depth of the light that reforms, how much it can permeate into the desire. I think that the Zohar, especially the introduction to the book of Zohar, should do that, because we're reading Zohar for all. And I saw that there is no more work it performs on us. People start receiving it as a part of the general study. They cannot they cannot ascribe to the Zohar a special force, special light, and that is a flaw. When we will read and study that, they will also start relating differently to the Zohar we're reading, in the Zohar itself, and in the book itself, and not the introduction of the book of Zohar.
Can I ask some more?
I don't know. The whole study was messed up today.
When Rav is talking about the correction of the thorns, and is that relating to everything around us, including the ones that are studying Torah that aren't on the...
It includes everyone. What we do spreads throughout the entire net. What everyone are doing, each and everyone spreads in the entire net. Only it depends on the intensity or how they influence. Every person in the world, not just Israel, whatever he does influences the whole net. Only depends how. Did you hear about a butterfly effect? So a butterfly doing like this once causes a hurricane, so they say. So what do you expect? You expect less than people?
Let's say a friend meets somebody, like we heard in the first article, that there's undirected studying that can even harm.
It can be either way, but eventually everyone bring everyone closer towards the goal. Only the question is it in the path of Torah or the path of suffering?
So what is the correction of the thorns? Let's say a friend is...
Correcting the thorns is that we will stop stabbing each other or poking each other like with those thorns. And we'll start relating to each other mercifully, not with judgment, rather with love, above our will to receive, so that we'll develop such relationship between us which will be suited for the upper light, which is complete bestowal, and then we too will bestow. And you will think less about words. First, you have to put yourself into such a feeling. Now I am complete egoist. I need to bestow. I need to love. Inside I hate. Outside I love. Inside I'm all thorns. Outside I have to be soft, like a rose. See how gentle it is. And so on. Now, if you imagine all those things below the parsa, above the parsa, green leaves, thorns, and the rose itself, white, red, you understand all those feelings with respect to others. What Malchut relates to Zer Anpin or the Creator? Zer Anpin is called the Creator, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the same thing. What it means in between friends, because from the love for the creatures you come to the love of the Creator. Write it down or write it down on the chart of your heart. So here we're talking about the Creator, but we have to understand that first necessarily has to be about people, because without going through them you can't make it to Him. This is why Malchut is called the assembly of all of Israel. It assembles all the souls from below, and then it can receive all the lights from above, because what she does is to convey that light to the souls that are included in her. Why are they included in her? Because they all want to become and be one soul. If you gradually put this form together, then you see a mechanism where all of a sudden everything connects together. And then after it is completely clear to you, that picture is completely clear to you, it's right in front of you, and you can picture it, even though we don't really appreciate it. Thorns below and above, they turn into something that develops. It rises to Ima, Mother. There it blossoms, connects to Zer Anpin, have beautiful scents and so forth, goes down. If the externals hold on to it, and then it becomes dry again and with thorns. Did you see a dry rose? What does it have? It's dry. And it has many thorns. And that's it. So if you can imagine all that, it's a good thing. Now imagine it not in a picture of a rose, rather in terms of human beings, of people. People. We want to connect. Then, if we want to connect, we want to be in the rose, in the assembly of Israel, who assembles everyone together. And when we discover out of our efforts to unite, we discover that we hate each other, that we turn each other away, and then we have all kinds of problems in the society which are revealed, but we understand that and we work above all that. Then we turn those thorns, which is us, we turn the thorns into green leaves, which support the rose, into 12 pairs of cattle that supports the sea of King Solomon, and so on. So after you have accepted and completed that picture, and you're in that picture, meaning you are clothing on the 12 pairs of cattle and then the Sea of Solomon, you dress yourself into those thorns and five leaves and the blessing cup. He didn't mention it here, yes? Not yet, anyway. So when you're holding a cup of blessing in five fingers, so when you clothe yourself into all those things, what do they represent? What do they symbolize? He could have brought you other signs. Why a rose? Why the Sea of Solomon? Why a blessing cup? From these two states of Gadnut and Gadlut, of Malchut and of Atzilut, you have millions of results and consequences in our world, examples. And he just brought you these few. But really, Katnut and Gadlut of Malchut of Atzilut, this is all there is, and this is all that governs our world. That's all there is to it. We're all included in Malchut of Atzilut. Therefore, these two states, this is our whole destiny. That's all there is. So after that, after such examples, you are moving on into those states. You're saying a blessing cup is like that. 12 pairs of cattle and the Sea of Solomon is like this. The rose is like that. And you turn them into parallel situations. And now you want to bring them into something universal. I don't want to speak about the rose. I don't want to speak about the sea or ocean or 12 pairs of cattle or a blessing cup. I want to speak about a system where basically all those external signs that he's telling us, those external examples, these are branches of the root, and the root is the system of connection between us. And in the system of connection between us, there's only the will to receive, our will to receive, and the will to bestow of the Creator, and that's it. How do these two desires, when they connect together in different manners, how do they build a rose? How do they build a Sea of Solomon? How do they build a blessing cup? And infinite details in reality. So I'm talking about the will to receive and the will to bestow, and about a system, the will to receive and the will to bestow, but integrating together, There is a will to receive of the creature, existence from absence, a will to receive of the creator, the preliminary existence from existence. These two desires, and everything is built from these two things. So from these examples of the rose and other things, I already rise to the roots and see the system. And I don't care. I'm studying here about the root and the branch. I'm studying about different manners here. I don't know how all these things are, how to name them in spirituality, so I can name them how they are in our world with the rose. So I'm free. I have all the worlds, and I'm traveling through them. And as a result, I start feeling that all those things are closer to me. And I also begin to feel that it belongs to me, that I'm a part of it. Now, let's do this between us. And then I realize what Chochmah is, what Chassadim is, Masach, Din, Judgment, Rachamim, Mercy, the connection between us, which is the assembly of Israel, direct to the Creator on the one hand, on the other hand, Israel, connected, assembly, assembles. Israel is called Zeranpin, Malchut is called Knesset Israel, it only assembles, it only gathers it, it only receives from it, and so on. So I learn a lot from it. These are things like a baby learns from life. He's not being ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. No. Rather, he perceives through the light. This is how he receives everything, the whole world. And this is included in him in different forms until they are depicted into the form called world. So I'm not studying just one phenomenon. I enter there, all of me, myself goes in there. There's an entirely new recognition of things, not in an external form. This is not how I learn, like in our world. I have to delve into it. I have to get inside. And therefore the study, it has to be, well, let's say like you're going into some country. If you just go there to know it and that's it, then you come to know it in different ways from all over. However, if you go there and you want to study the zoology of that country, then you go to forest and other places and study zoology, the world of the animals. So Zohar opens the world to us like to a baby, and whoever is ready to accept it this way, he goes in there, he enters. And whoever doesn't, this is what is called a sealed, secret, concealed book. It's not concealed. Go ahead, take it. But why did Kabbalists say that you shouldn't? Because if you're not ready, if you're not ripe for it, if you didn't develop enough in order to get in there, like a baby opens up all of his senses and comes in. If you're not like that, if you want to go in there through your intellect, that book will give you an even greater darkness, an even greater darkness. So what do people say? There's nothing there. They disregard it, put it aside. And because people can't. They have to protect themselves. They have to feel darkness. So they disregard it. They stay away from it. They're afraid of it because they really felt darkness. And many times, today we're not talking about darkness or light, because today people don't have the right approach to anything at all, not even the opposite approach. And they just open some page, read it, and they did what they had to do, and that's it. The style of the Zohar is highly important. It's a drawing, illustration, an emotion. It's a thriller. You need to enjoy. It's like a novel, you know. You enjoy the sentences, the style of writing, and such a twist of the language, how it turns things around. You enjoy not just from the topic itself, rather from how it is been presented to you. It adds a lot. You become cleaved to the author. You love his style, his method. You come to love him himself. This is how it brings you closer to him. Therefore, we will study, and we will start feeling that this is a different kind of study. It pulls you into it, into the world of the Zohar. And the more barriers we will put as we go with our minds, it's bad. If you want to study Tess, the study of the Ten Sefirot, and even there it is full of emotion. Only it is presented in such a way that you don't understand it. You don't understand. There are experts who look at people and they see that, oh, he can't control himself, he is filled with nerves. They say, take this, take that, take some stuff. He's given 10 grams of something. He has 90 kilograms, so we just add him 5 additional grams, and all of a sudden he becomes relaxed. So the experts, they say, they understand those influences, but we don't. Same thing here. There is a difference in forces that when only 10 grams of forces are being added, but there is an emotional result, so people can put the two things together and they live in those two discernments together, and some don't. So we, in our world, we're in both places. This is called the wisdom of life. You can't just feel without understanding the reasons and causes and effects. And Zohar brings you exactly there. And also the study of the Ten Sefirot. Only there you truly have to be of spiritual attainment. The Zohar, it accompanies you, it also opens you up. The study of the Ten Sefirot, well, depends what, depends which. Let's say if the first part of Tess or the second part, or other parts of it. Some of it are very emotional, inner reflection, part one. But usually, it is for people for whom the mind and emotion are already in attainment. So for them it doesn't matter if you're talking about Sefirot or how many words you have in the deed of creation or the rose or the Sea of Solomon. He's excited. He sees the same form, the same picture. For him it is all one feeling, because the light fills his kli in those 5 variations: sea, rose, Sea of Solomon, the rose, the blessing cup, and such manners. And he feels the same thing, the same thing. You can tell him about this, about that, and he will feel the same thing, because for him these are lights and vessels. Truly so. Yes, Iran.
I want to say that what you just explained, it's what was felt, let's say, yesterday when we read the introduction, it really felt like life. And we started taking it to pieces today and yesterday. It started like a book that explains about life, but the life wasn't left. And now it's like you came back to the life. That's at least my impression. Now if we're back in there, so I wanted to ask about that state called Knesset Yisrael. Is unity the state and nullification is the action, or in connecting there's something greater than nullifying, or that nullifying is the action and the unity is the result, or is there something extra? I can't bring this closer to me.
Depends on which state of annulment. If it is in a state of an embryo, then only in nullification. All the rest is on the upper one. All the rest is done by the upper one upon him. All this depicting force, there is a supporting force, there is a developing force, detaining force. I forget words lately. So there is the detaining force and the depicting force, those two forces. So there's an nullification from the upper one. The upper one activates those two forces accordingly and start depicting him. This is in a fetus. If it is katnut, that too is annulment. But he's annulling the vessels of bestowal. He annuls them and he wants to cleave on to the upper one. There, it is annulment with the stabilizing force and detaining force from the low one also. There should be an interaction with the upper one. He has to work with him together. Therefore, there is already adhesion, so we say, but it's not a complete adhesion, rather a partial one, according to the equivalence of form. Don't do to others what you yourself hate. So, with all these vessels, he cleaves onto him, but he cannot fulfill the upper one. He gives him pleasure by nullifying himself, but no more than that. So, this is an active annulment, and the most active annulment is in Gadlut, where he annuls himself in Gadlut over his vessels of reception. And his annulment is that he is holding on to the upper one 100%. And the upper one, and this is something I hope we'll get there someday, the upper one is pushing him away. He's pushing him away. And in spite of it, he is cleaved to him. These are very, very sublime things. Well, I said it, so that's it. So now we're moving on to the next part of the lesson.
So let's sing a song together.
Rise to a new degree, you and me, right here and now, we are holding you up. We shall do and we shall hear, that's all we know. There's none else besides him and we won't let go. Ore, come and see how this love has set us free. We are one creed, and we're living in unity. Ore, come and see how this love has set us free. On the barriers, above the waves, awake in the dawn, we are holding you up. Armed with this covenant, it's coming true.